Today it's Saturday, June 10th, 2023. It's 22:02 hours. Now it's 22:03 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you. This is a song, like normal, at the beginning of our study, we have a song. This is from 1970, and it was charting at number one in New Zealand. And it didn't do as well as that in other places, but it was number seven in Canada and Ireland, but it was number six in the UK. And also number 20 in the U.S. Easy Listening Billboard. But it was also, by the way, it was 9 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 and number 7 on the Cashbox Top 100 in the U.S. So it's quite a big, it was quite a big hit. It was number 15 in South Africa and number 61 in Australia. It's called Gimme That Ding. It's performed by the Pipkins.
Well, that's right, I'm sad and blue, cause I can do the boogaloo. I'm lost, can't do my thing, and that's why I sing the gimme that ding.
From 1970, the Pipkins, Gimme That Ding. What a song, what a song. It reminds us of our childhood, maybe, when perhaps we were young and we were a little more selfish, or a lot more selfish, but whatever the case may be. Our study from Wild Road today, Little Children, is from Part 2, Chapter 11, Paragraph 6. We're going to continue talking about the same matters that we were discussing yesterday in a little more detail, or a little bit of a different way, a different angle. The 51 years of Memnon and his son Ramesses, possibly as identified from the two kings of the Ethiopian king list, called the EKL, are also showing some relation to the 49 years, 944 to 895 BCE. But there is also an exact correlation between the end of the Trojan War in 888 and the date 919, as 31 years, the difference between those two. And we know, of course, from our previous paragraph that 919 was the year one of Takelot the First. The very length, also, this 31 years of Memnon's reign, from the EKL. There's a coincidence there. Where Memnon's son Harsisi, in brackets Rameses, because look at the name Harsisi, it looks a little bit like Rameses, doesn't it? Ruling Thebes at the same time that Memnon ruled Persia, however, there's a possible problem with Memnon's age or his sons. Since the Memnon who went to war at Troy was youthful. In order to consider that more fully, we'd have to think about how do we know he was youthful. Maybe he wasn't youthful, but it makes sense that he would have been youthful to fight against other youthful men in the war. But he may have been a charioteer, of course, and the charioteers typically were more mature, older men. At least we know that from the games that were carried out or conducted in the Roman Empire. When you look at the winners of the chariot races, they were not the youngest men. However, okay, it says it's a possible problem with Memnon's age. And that means that if we think of Memnon as having ruled from 919 and fought in the Trojan War some years later, there is some question about how old he was. But we also talked about the 944 to 895 period, which is 49 years. And if Memnon was ruling even from 944 in that time period, then there's even more of a question, so that's why we brought it up here, to do with his age in the years 898 to 888, which was the Trojan War in our chronology. So we're always considering, is our chronology correct or is it not? We're always analyzing, we're trying to decide, we're trying to be critical of ourselves in everything we're doing. We want to know the truth. Sir Isaac sees no problem, as he doesn't believe Memnon ever went to Troy, but rather died at an advanced age. The 518 years that Josephus gives for the elapsed time after the departure of the shepherds to Jerusalem, or 1452 BCE, when Joshua and Israel arrive at Jericho in our chronology, to the time from after the departure of the shepherds to Jerusalem in 1452, to the time of this fictitious, quote-unquote fictitious, Amenophis, when we subtract the 518 from 1452, we get 934 BCE, or 10 years after the death of Osorkon. You can check that number. Or 10 years after the death of Osorkon the First in the Blessed Genealogical Dating, or the BG Dating. This is 10 years after the death of Osorkon I, who died in 944, as we discussed already, having begun to rule in 959 when Shoshank himself ended his reign by presumably by dying in 959. So 944 was the death of Osorkon after 15 years of rule. Yeah, but many people say that, but in our dating, it's ending in 944, and then the 10 years that elapsed subsequently led to the 934, which was the time of the so-called fictitious Amenophis, talked about by Josephus. He's the one who wrote that this Amenophis was fictitious. And that's the date then of Memnon, according to Sir Isaac Newton. Is that true, or is that just... I think this is all, this part is from Josephus, but it may be somewhat connected to Sir Isaac Newton, too. It's not clear. I have a memory of having written this. Well, there had to be 10 years of, during the reign of Asa, there were 10 years of peace, right? Is that the time? Are those the 10 years of peace? Or see, we always should be thinking about it, even if we thought of it before, or even regardless of whether we thought about it before, we should always be rethinking everything to make sure that we haven't missed something important. For the date of Memnon, we have 934 then. And Memnon, we're saying, is this person whom Josephus calls the fictitious Amenophis. That would be his beginning in 934. And that's important that we tried to do this calculation. So why did we get the 10 years? That we'll have to look at the work that Josephus wrote, where he wrote about this, and we'll have to look at the... we're going to look at this. It's a footnote number one. It's from Manetho, with an English translation, 1940, by W.G. Waddell, page 121. There's something there. We have that Manetho somewhere here. But let's look at it right now. Where is it? I don't want to take too long, but I think it's right here somewhere. Is it here? That's probably it right there. This could be it. Manetho with an English translation. W.G. Waddell. Looks like that's it. Let's see. I mean, that is it. But whether we're going to find it quickly, I don't know. Page 121 is what we're looking for. Okay. 187, we went too far. This should be closer. 179. Okay, we need to go further than that. 147. 123, here we are. 121. So, let's zoom in. Right, so here we have... Oops. Dragging it. There we go. There's the 518 years mentioned. This fictitious person. After citing a king, Amenophis, a fictitious person, for which reason he did not venture to define the length of his reign. This is Josephus writing. Although in the case of the other kings, he adds their years precisely. Josephus says, Manetho attaches to him certain legends, having doubtless forgotten that according to his own chronicle, the exodus of the shepherds to Jerusalem took place 518 years earlier. And then he talks about some things. What else does he say here? I'm looking for the matter of the 10 years at this point. Of course, there are other things written here, too. But I'm just looking for this 10 years. Right. There's a 13-year period mentioned there. Yeah, I'm thinking that the 10 years comes from Sir Isaac Newton somehow, that he said something about 10 years. That was what my memory was telling me. But it's even though I prepared this, I didn't think of these things until I started reading it just now. So that's all for that. We've covered it. It's not in Manetho, the 10 years. That's all we need to know. We can go back to our article. Here we are. So this is very interesting, though, because however, I continue, the way at which Josephus arrives at this 518 years is not correct in dating Ramesses II too late in the sequence, along with his father Seti I, or Sethos, as he's called. He does, however, rightly give 66 years to Ramesses II, as generally agreed, and the 59 years of Seti, also called Sethos, can be now perfectly, I don't know why I thought it was a verb, it's an adjective, or an adverb, perfectly, it's an adverb, perfectly accounted, I was trying to read it as a noun. In the BG chronology, the 59 years of Seti, the first, can be perfectly accounted in the BG chronology as the time from December 1375, which is Akhenaten year 1, to June 1315, barely less than 60 years, often attributed to Horemheb, found now to fit beautifully into the BG chronology, whereas the 135 years of Dynasty 20 in Africanus, added to 1115 for Smendes, gives 1250, Africanus being a translation of, or a copy of Manetho, of course, just like Eusebius is. So in Africanus we get 135 for Dynasty 20, and we add that to 1115. We just took the number from Africanus because that was the number that seemed to be the best to line up with what we thought, or with what our chronology did in Egypt. So when we add those two numbers, we get 1250. And on top of that, 66 and 59 added to it gives 1375. Which is, well, 66 on to 1250 would be 1316, and 59 would give 1375. It works. Disregarding details about Dynasty 19, in other words, we don't even have to know anything about Dynasty 19, which is the dynasty of... what is Dynasty 19? Isn't that the one with Ramesses? We'll have to look at Manetho again. So, that's not it. That's not it. That's the song again. Okay. So let's go back. Let's go. Like we're looking for this. Let's do this. Let's shrink this down, so we can read it. There we are. So. We're looking for Dynasty 19, right? I'm sure we're in the right vicinity here when we're seeing Josephus writing about these matters. We're in the right area. We just have to go to the end of what Josephus wrote and see where we are. There's Dynasty 19. Okay. So Dynasty 19 is the one that has Seti, and he begins with Seti, right? And then Ramesses, who... in one version has 66 years, then 20 years, and then another Ramesses. But this second Ramesses with 60 years, this is not accurate. There's no second Ramesses with 60 years that we know about. There's just one with 66 years. He's the one that rules that long. But this is the best we have. This is Manetho. This is, at least in many cases, it's the best we have. Not in this case. I mean, it's not perfect at all. Then we have the 19th dynasty, right? Which is, this is the one that has, well, this is the second version from Eusebius. It has 55, 66, and then 40, and then 26. It doesn't have a second Ramesses, according to Eusebius. It was Africanus who had the problems for this 19th dynasty that we don't believe are correct. We don't believe he's correct on that. But this is not correct either. 55 for Seti. We saw that it only works if we have 59 for Seti. So, but somewhere else, somebody gives Seti 59. And that's, well, we can see that. Maybe that's this link here. Fotheringham? Yeah, that's Fotheringham. There's dynasty 6. Let's shrink this down. Oh, okay. We want the 2 pages. There we are. So we want to go to dynasty 19 right here. You see? Oh, there it is. Seti 55. But Josephus somewhere gives Seti 59. Where is that? Yeah, well, we saw he did. We saw what Josephus said. He said he gave him 59. We saw that, but it's not written here. Not in this particular account of Josephus here. Okay, but 55 is pretty close to 59, so we understand that it's comparable, and that's the kind of mess that we have to deal with the Egyptian chronology in Manetho generally. We always have to deal with that. It's very sad. It's very unfortunate. But it's interesting. We get these things. We don't have to worry about the details of Dynasty 19, which is, that was the 19th dynasty here. It seems to me we're not dealing with the 18th dynasty either. We don't have to worry about it either. We're just jumping all the way back from Ramesses all the way back to Akhenaten, which skips out a lot of these other kings like Tutankhamun and Horemheb and all the other kings that ruled in between. The father of Akhenaten is of course prior to Akhenaten, but after Akhenaten there were a couple of short reigns, and then there was Tutankhamun, and then we had Pharaoh I, and then we had Horemheb. Right? And then we had Ramesses the First and Seti the First. And then Ramesses the Second. But Ramesses the First is the beginning of Dynasty 19, even though it doesn't look like it in Manetho, because he's not there in Manetho in Dynasty 19. Ramesses the First doesn't exist in this part of Manetho. When we look at Fotheringham, we see there's let's go back some flicker. When I put my mouse over it, it disappears. Maybe it'll stay there now. Armes has 5 years, then Ramesses the First. We see confusion again because Seti doesn't really appear there, unless he's Armes, which is still, the 5 years doesn't look right for him. He reigned for 15 years, we believe, not 59 like we use. But when we take the 59 years, we're just taking that for the whole period of time, which includes all the kings that are not then needed to be mentioned. The 59 just is a way that some of the record keepers had of deleting the kings they didn't want to have in the record, so they gave Seti 59 years. That's one possible reason for it. But it makes it simpler, so because we didn't have... so, and Seti preceded Ramesses, right? We had Ramesses... still have the problem with the display of this page. Maybe I'll have to refresh it, but I don't want to try that right now because we're doing the video right now. So the thing is, Seti preceded, you see Ramesses at the bottom of the right hand corner of the bottom of the left hand page. There we see Ramesses 68 years. That should be 66, but it's the right approximate number, and so that's the Ramesses, called the Ramesses the Second. So Seti preceded him, and we don't really see Seti on that list. So there is a problem with that list. And if we look at Africanus on the left-hand corner, the bottom of that page, he doesn't even have the 66 years for Ramesses. And then when we see Dynasty 19, so what really happened is Ramesses I was the beginning of Dynasty 19. Then Seti, He's the second king. Then Ramesses II here. So this is where Ramesses should appear here with 66 years in Josephus, which is correct. It's very good. So Josephus generally is more accurate than the other two accounts of Manetho. But Josephus leaves out, he leaves out. And from that we also see that Ramesses is Armesses. That's a name for Ramesses. We see that from Josephus in his account of Dynasty 19. But preceding Ramesses, he does not have Seti. So all of these accounts, we need them all in order to get any even remotely accurate attempt of accounting for these rulers. The name of this intruder, who is called Amenophis, okay, he was an intruder according to Josephus, I think, is what we're talking about. But you'd have to read this account to find that. But if we go back into Josephus to page 121, that was a lot of pages that we scrolled through. It's not working, is it? There we go. I need to click on the extreme edge of the page to avoid selecting the text. But that shouldn't work like that. It normally is not working that way by default. So here we have 121, okay. So now we see, right. So he was an intruder, I'm going to say. We don't have time to read it all. But I know I've read it all, and that's where I got this information that I put in the paragraph. This intruder Amenophis. And we're going to study more probably tomorrow on the same subject in the next paragraph. But this intruder Amenophis, at least we may do that. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the next paragraph says. I'm not preparing all of it in advance. But Amenophis agrees with his name, that is, with the name Amenhotep Zagdur. And with the name Memnon. Memnon. So this Memnon, who was a very legendary person, he was in the Iliad, Homer's account of the Trojan War. Memnon was a famous warrior, but his name resembles this Amenophis. So this Amenophis who came in all of a sudden into Egypt, he came from, probably prior to the Trojan War, but he came in from Persia, and also his son is called Ramesses. So he's Amenhotep Zagdur, which means one, or the one interpretation of it being that he's named Amenhotep Sector. Sector meaning he ruled in more than one place at the same time. That appears to be a possible interpretation. And his son Ramesses, agreeable to the name Ramesu or Ramsenitis or Ramesses. In this way, and so that's interesting. Ramesses is agreeable to Ramesu and Ramsenitis as the form of the name is concerned. And in this way, may the BG resurrect the elusive quote-unquote Memnon. That's important because Memnon was legendary. We never had any account in history of Memnon until now. He fits right in here because we've got this person whom Josephus calls fictitious, called Amenophis. Now, the part of the reason why Josephus didn't like this is because he didn't believe that the timing was right for this person, Amenophis. He believed that that Manetho had the timing wrong for Amenophis, and he does for Memnon. If Memnon didn't come in at the time of wherever we were talking about here. Where were we talking about? Oh yeah, take a lot the first. He didn't. Well, yeah, he was. He did come in then. He came in, but the time. What was the time of take a lot the first? Yeah, that was right. 9:19. Okay. Yeah, he did come in there, but. So. Yeah. I forget whether Josephus was arguing that he should be later or earlier. I can't remember right now, but we see that at least Josephus, the whole point is we don't get any accurate history, keep in mind, from Josephus or Manetho or anybody else. We're the only ones who have the accurate account of it. If, in fact, we do have it, which is even doubtful, possibly, but we hope it's pretty well established, at least much more so than any other account. But Manetho attaches to him certain legends. This, you know, he forgot that according to his own chronicle, the exodus of the shepherds to Jerusalem took place 518 years earlier. Yeah, right. So he talked about. Yeah, he talked. That's right. Manetho talks about this Amenophis as though he was at the, he was there at the time of the. Of the exodus, of the arrival of the Israelites to Jerusalem in 1452. That's what Josephus is saying. That Manetho believes, and it is true, that if you read it, if you read Manetho, he talks about the shepherds going to Jerusalem during the time of Amenophis, and he says that's wrong. So Josephus is agreeing with us here that it was 518 years after that. At least we're agreeing with Josephus. He's not agreeing with us. We're agreeing with him. We're trying to see whether he's correct by subtracting 518, which we did, from 1452. And that's how we got 934 for the time of Memnon. And this is remarkable. It's really remarkable because if it works out, and we're going to see if it does, then we've really established some history here using the help of Josephus when he commented on Manetho. So it is with great trepidation that this chapter is written. But in this way, may the BG resurrect the elusive Memnon. As the uncertainty in Manetho's record prevents true history. Manetho prevents us from having the history, but we can resurrect it, it looks like, and it is with possible recrimination that we introduce an historical interpolation involving this person Memnon. The account of Josephus attributed to Manetho has been taken seemingly out of context. Also, the account of Josephus attributed to Manetho. I'm not sure what I meant by that. Isn't the account of Manetho attributed to Josephus and not the other way around? The account of Josephus attributed to Manetho has been taken seemingly out of context. Okay, right. No, I see what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm saying that Josephus' account of Manetho is really out of context because it's 518 years different. So without some archaeological basis, we need some other evidence to back it up. So that's what we're going to talk about next. That's the end of our study for today. But isn't that incredibly exciting? Isn't that mind-boggling that we can resurrect a mythical figure like Memnon and give him a date and make him historical? I mean, with a date, we have history. If you have a date, you've got an historical person. not a mythological, not a mythical, not a legendary person anymore. He's factual, he's historical, if we can put a date on him. So that's the importance. That's why I say with possible recrimination, it's horrible if we're wrong. I mean, it's regrettable if we're wrong. So today's proverb, little children, from Proverbs 29, verse 3, a man that is loving wisdom makes his father rejoice, but he that is having companionship with prostitutes destroys valuable things. Right. But we know, of course, Jesus had his immense, powerful ministry where he helped prostitutes. But he didn't do it by seeking their companionship. He was doing it to help them. Of course, a man that is loving wisdom. So he didn't spend amounts of time with anybody where it would take away from his ministry and the time he needed for his ministry. He spent most of his time, in fact, well, he spent all of his time once he started his preaching work, once his ministry began, all of his time was spent ministering, except he did try to rest a little bit here and there, but as we've seen, but he wouldn't have sought companionship when his mission, he knew, was to preach and to minister to others. He wasn't seeking to be ministered to. A man that is loving wisdom makes his father rejoice, but he that is having companionship with prostitutes destroys valuable things. So we would want to make our Father, Jehovah, happy. Now Leviticus 10. So we continue our study of Leviticus, little ones. Later on, Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, took up and brought each one his fire holder and put fire in them and placed incense upon it. And they began offering before Jehovah illegitimate fire, which he had not prescribed for them. At this, a fire came out from before Jehovah. I was going to say out of heaven. At this, a fire came out from before Jehovah and consumed them. It doesn't say from heaven, but it could have been from the ark of the covenant, perhaps, so that they died before Jehovah. Then Moses said to Aaron, "This is what Jehovah has spoken, saying, among those near to me, let me be sanctified, and before the face of all the people, let me be glorified." And Aaron kept silent. So Moses called Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Uzziel, Aaron's uncle, and said to them, "Come near, carry your brothers from in front of the holy place to outside the camp." So they may have done it just on the altar of sacrifice, on the altar. What's that called? The altar. Upon which they made the offerings, outside the. I'm trying to think of what it's called. Outside the tent of meeting, it might have been that altar upon which they offered, or near that altar where they offered illegitimate fire. So Moses said to these two, "Come near and carry your brothers from in front of the holy place to outside the camp." They accordingly came near and carried them in their robes to outside the camp, just as Moses had spoken. They had been made to die by the fire that came out from before Jehovah. Subsequently, Moses said to Aaron and to Eleazar and Ithamar, Aaron's other sons, "Do not let your heads go ungroomed, and you must not tear your garments, that you may not die, and that he may not become indignant against all the assembly, But your brothers of the whole house of Israel will do the weeping over the burning, which Jehovah has made burn. And from the entrance of the tent of meeting you must not go out for fear you may die, because Jehovah's anointing oil is upon you. So they did according to Moses' word. And Jehovah proceeded to speak to Aaron, saying, Do not drink wine or intoxicating liquor, you and your sons with you, when you come into the tent of meeting, that you may not die. It is a statute to time indefinite for your generations, both in order to make a distinction between the holy thing and the profane, and between the unclean thing and the clean, and in order to teach the sons of Israel all the regulations that Jehovah has spoken to them by means of Moses. Then Moses spoke to Aaron and to Eleazar and Ithamar, his sons that were left, Take the grain offering that was left over from Jehovah's offerings made by fire, and eat it unfermented near the altar, because it is something most holy. And you must eat it in a holy place, because it is your allowance and the allowance of your sons from Jehovah's offerings made by fire. For so I have been commanded. And you will eat the breast of the wave offering and the leg of the sacred portion in a clean place, you and your sons and your daughters with you, because they have been given as your allowance and the allowance of your sons from the communion sacrifices of the sons of Israel. They will bring the leg of the sacred portion and the breast of the wave offering, along with the offerings made by fire of the fatty pieces, in order to wave the wave offering to and fro before Jehovah, and it must serve as an allowance to time indefinite for you and your sons with you, just as Jehovah has commanded. And Moses searched thoroughly for the goat of the sin offering, and look, it had been burned up. So he grew indignant at Eleazar and Ithamar, Aaron's sons that were left, saying, Why did you not eat the sin offering in the place that is holy, since it is something most holy, and he has given it to you that you may answer for the error of the assembly, so as to make atonement for them before Jehovah? Look, its blood has not been brought into the holy place within. You should have eaten it without fail in the holy place, just as I had been commanded. At this Aaron spoke to Moses, Look, today they have presented their sin offering and their burnt offering before Jehovah, while such things as these began to befall me. And had I eaten the sin offering today, would it prove satisfactory in Jehovah's eyes? When Moses got to hear that, then it proved satisfactory in his eyes. So Aaron had just lost two of his sons. So he was in the midst of possibly what must have been a very intense grieving. His sons that were burnt up, Nadab and Abihu, were burnt up. So his other two sons at least had presented something before Jehovah. So it's not clear whether Aaron himself did eat the sin offering himself. Maybe he did. But Moses had seen that Eleazar and Ithamar had not eaten the sin offering, and that was, it was an error on their part. So he could have had them put to death. Possibly that was what was going to happen. But of course, that would be rather extreme, since Aaron had already lost two of his sons. Now Mark, let's look at Mark. But Aaron himself did say something that satisfied Moses. Mark chapter 10. From there Jesus rose and came to the frontiers of Judea and across the Jordan, and again crowds came together to him. And as he was accustomed to do, he again went teaching them. Pharisees now approached, and to put him to the test, began questioning him whether it was lawful for a man to divorce a wife. In answer, he said to them, What did Moses command you? They said, Moses allowed the writing of a certificate of dismissal and divorcing her. But Jesus said to them, out of regard for your hard-heartedness, he wrote you this commandment. However, from the beginning of creation, quote, he made them male and female. On this account, a man will leave his father and his mother, and the two will be one flesh, end quote, so that they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God yoked together, let no man put apart. When again in the house, the disciples began to question him concerning this, and he said to them, whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if ever a woman, after divorcing her husband, marries another, she commits adultery. Now we know that that is always true unless adultery has already been committed. Then divorcing is permitted, at least according to the hard-heartedness that Jesus mentioned. That was referring to something else. That was allowing divorce without adultery, but except on the grounds of adultery is what Jesus was talking about, as we see from other scriptures. We could look at a footnote, not a footnote, but a cross reference. No, we don't see it from that. Okay. Let's see. G. Now, of course, I think it's also true that a husband or a wife can forgive their partner, too. If one commits adultery, the other one can forgive their partner so that the marriage doesn't have to be broken. They don't have to get a divorce. But if the one who was sinned against cannot forgive the other one, then a divorce is permitted. That's the New Testament or the New Covenant way of doing it. Not according to the way they did it in the time of Moses, where they were allowed to dismiss people or dismiss one of the mates, could dismiss the other, that is. At least the man could divorce his wife. At least that's what it was saying in the time of Moses. But that was not what Jesus was... he was not saying that, or at least in the time of Moses, it was not talking about adultery. There are scriptures, we're just not finding them here. They should be linked so that we can find them. They're not linked. There it is. Matthew 5 and 32. It's linked right there. In reference I. However, I say to you in Matthew 5 and 32 that everyone divorcing his wife except on account of fornication makes her a subject for adultery. There you go. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. So it had to do with fornication or whether the one person had already committed adultery. Then it would be allowed. But it's better not to do it. If you can forgive your partner, if it's possible to forgive them, then it's better not to get a divorce. Now people began bringing him young children for him to touch these, but the disciples reprimanded them. At seeing this, Jesus was indignant and said to them, let the young children come to me. Do not try to stop them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such like ones. Truly I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God like a young child will by no means enter into it. And he took the children into his arms and began blessing them, laying his hands upon them. And as he was going out on his way, a certain man ran up and fell upon his knees before him and put the question to him, good teacher, what must I do to inherit everlasting life? Jesus said to him, why do you call me good? Nobody is good except one, God. You know the commandments. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Do not defraud. Honor your father and mother. The man said to him, teacher, All these things I have kept from my youth on. Jesus looked upon him and felt love for him and said to him, one more thing is missing about you. Go, sell what things you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come be my follower. But he grew sad at the saying and went off grieved, for he was holding many possessions. After looking around, Jesus said to his disciples, how difficult a thing it will be for those with money to enter into the kingdom of God. But the disciples gave way to surprise at his words. In response, Jesus again said to them, children, how difficult a thing it is to enter into the kingdom of God. It is easier for a camel to go through a needle's eye than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. They became still more astounded and said to him, who, in fact, can be saved? Looking straight at them, Jesus said, with men it is impossible, but not so with God, for all things are possible with God. Peter started to say to him, look, we left all things and have been following you. Jesus said, truly I say to you, men, no one has left house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for my sake and for the sake of the good news who will not get 100-fold now in this period of time, houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and fields with persecutions and in the coming system of things everlasting life. However, many that are first will be last and the last first. Now they were advancing on the road up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was going in front of them, and they felt amazement, but those who followed began to fear. Once again he took the 12 aside and started to tell them these things destined to befall him. Here we are advancing up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and will deliver him to men of the nations, and they will make fun of him and will spit upon him and scourge him and kill him. But 3 days later he will rise. And James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, stepped up to him and said, teacher, we want you to do for us whatever it is we ask you for. He said to them, what do you want me to do for you? They said to him, grant us to sit down, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory. But Jesus said to them, you do not know what you are asking for. Are you able to drink the cup which I am drinking, or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am being baptized? They said to him, we are able. At that Jesus said to them, the cup I am drinking you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am being baptized you will be baptized. However, this sitting down at my right or at my left is not mine to give, but it belongs to those for whom it has been prepared. Well, when the 10 others heard about it, they started to be indignant at James and John. But Jesus, after calling them to him, said to them, you know that those who appear to be ruling the nations lord it over them, and that their great ones wield authority over them. This is not the way among you, but whoever wants to become great among you must be your minister, and whoever wants to be first among you must be the slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be ministered to, but to minister, and to give his soul a ransom in exchange for many. And they came into Jericho. But as he and his disciples and a considerable crowd were going out of Jericho, Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting beside the road. When he heard that it was Jesus the Nazarene, he started shouting and saying, Son of David, Jesus, have mercy on me. At this many began sternly telling him to be silent, but he kept shouting that much more, Son of David, have mercy on me. So Jesus stopped and said, call him. And they called the blind man, saying to him, take courage, get up, he's calling you. Throwing off his outer garment, he leapt to his feet and went to Jesus, and in answer to him, Jesus said, what do you want me to do for you? The blind man said to him, Rabboni, let me recover sight. And Jesus said to him, go, your faith has made you well. And immediately he recovered sight, and he began to follow him on the road. That's the end of Mark chapter 10. And that concludes our study for today, little children. The wild road is a very important study of chronology, as far as chronology goes. It's a very important study. And today was a little bit difficult Where's my watch? Wait a minute. Oh, yeah, I was in the middle of winding my watches. I need to get one of my watches. Which watch is it? Which is my next watch? It's Cami, I think. So tomorrow, hopefully, we'll understand the Egyptian chronology a little bit better. And we can, if also, anyone who wants to can look up the references and read them and see what we're talking about. So, oh, it's Annie. Annie's the next. Okay. I was winding all my watches. I don't know. I finished them. That's right. I did finish winding all my watches. I did do that. I was successful in that. And then I had some work to do in the house. I've been trying to wash all my bedding and get it all washed because I seem to have been bit. I'm getting bitten by some kind of bugs. But it doesn't appear that I can find any evidence of these bugs, so there probably aren't any bugs. But there's no evidence, you know, to say there would be, that there are any, in fact. But I'm just using this as an opportunity to wash all my bedclothes. And in so doing, I found that my vacuum cleaner had, it's got a beautiful HEPA bag, which is a really good filter. A HEPA filter is a very, very good filter that filters out almost like I think it's 99.7% or something, some number like that, of all the small particles. It really is a great filter. So my vacuum is a Kirby, and the Kirby bag that I have, I got a special one for HEPA. It's a HEPA, so it filters out even the fine dust very effectively, whereas the other Kirby bags are not. Well, it's not just that. No, the other Kirby bags are good too, but this is a bag you don't have to throw out. I think that's what the difference is. But once I realized it was completely full, then I had to vacuum the bed again, because it vacuums up using the beater brush and the suction together on the mattress. It sucks out a lot of things, whatever's in there, like if there's any dead skin. But in my case, there wouldn't have been because I had a cover that was, a cover that was on the bed for the purpose of preventing that. And I've ordered another cover because only one of the two mattresses was covered, but that was the one I was sleeping on. So, but I had all these other covers on top of that. I had a fitted sheet, and I had towels on top of that, and then I had another sheet, and then a blanket, and then I was sleeping on the blanket. And I didn't find any evidence of insects anywhere when I did all the cleaning. But I still did it all. But once I found out the bag it was full, then I had to do the vacuuming all over again because there would have been no suction through the bag because it was jammed, clogged. So, but then I cleaned the bag out, and I vacuumed the bed again. And I washed all these clothes, all the bed clothes, so there was a lot of washing. Three loads, actually. So that's why I was a little bit late today. I bought out the opportune time. And remember Psalm 110 where it says, your people will offer themselves willingly on the day of your military force? Well, I thought of that today for some reason. So it is June 10th, 2023, it's 23:01 hours. And for me, Ward Green, it's Annie and Dusty. That's appropriate. I saw a lot of dust today. I had to wear a mask, a really good filter, a dust filter mask, while I was doing all that work with cleaning out the dust bag. That was a lot of dust. And it's Annie and Dusty saying bye for now.